Lake Effect continues on WUWM. I'm Mitch Tyke. Austin Kleon has made newspaper censorship fun. Well, it's not really censorship, but here's how he describes what he does.
I make boxes around words that pop up at me, and I usually try to arrange those words into a little funny phrase or a saying, and then I black out everything I don't need. It sort of looks like if the CIA did haiku.
Kleon still does these newspaper blackout poems each day, but he's also expanded his reach with a best-selling book, Steal Like an Artist, and his newest, Show Your Work, 10 Ways to Share Your Creativity and Get Discovered. Kleon tells Lake Effect's Bonnie North that the prescriptions he sets out are really pretty simple.
Anyone can do it, but it takes a lot of effort. You know, there's a lot of work. That's something that I always try to emphasize, and whenever I'm talking to aspiring anybody's really, is just the enormous amount of work there is, you know, in front of you if you want to make yourself successful. I think a lot of times people say, you know, they think the inspiration is the problem or getting the good idea is the problem. I'm like, no, it's the execution. You know, there's so much work involved.
What is that wonderful quote? It's 1% inspiration, 99% perspiration.
I think that's Edison. I think it's Thomas Edison, but I'm not totally sure. But yeah, it's 99% perspiration. So, you know, what I'm interested in is just, how can you turn what you do into a daily practice, something where you just show up every day in the same spot, the same time, and you do the work? You know, because I think that's the only way that, you know, in my career I've been able to do it, you know, not a sprint but a marathon. You know, just how do you build that long-term approach to your work?
Well, you're dealing with a culture, though, that wants instant gratification.
Yes. I don't know if you saw the documentary 20 Feet from Stardom. It's a documentary about backup singers, famous backup singers like Darlene Love, who actually did do her own solo career with Phil Spector. But, you know, just how hard it is to go from being a backup singer to the main stage. But of all people, Sting, as in Sting, the bass player, lead singer in The Police, Sting, he had my favorite quote in there. And he said, there's a lot of spiritual work that's to be done in art. And he said, you know, these American Idol shows, if you jump on these shows, you bypass all that work and that slow build towards your craft and your career. And I don't think it's very healthy. You know, I don't think overnight success is very good for anybody because it fizzles out eventually.
And then you have nothing to fall back on.
Yeah. I mean, if you look at a lot of child actors, you know, there are very few child actors that are able to actually turn that early success into a long-term career, you know, but there are those that do.
Like Jodie Foster.
Right. Yeah. And most of them, it's about taking that early success and actually doing the work then, you know, dedicating yourself to that craft and having that long-term approach.
Well, you set out 10 basic things to follow in your book, Show Your Work. And the first one that I love is you don't have to be a genius.
Yeah, so many times when we think about creativity or innovation, we think about, you know, these great ideas, and our culture gets propelled forward by these lone geniuses, right? These people working in solitude that are just superhumanly talented, you know, people with names like Mozart, Picasso, Steve Jobs. They're usually old dead white men, you know, and, you know, they put their stuff out there and they change the world, right? Well, you know, if you go through history and you look at a lot of these characters, none of them were operating in isolation. You know, a lot of times they were part of a community of thinkers, a whole kind of ecology of talent. Brian Eno has a name for this, the music producer Brian Eno. He calls it senius, not genius. So many of the great innovations and creative leaps in our culture are the result of a senius. So sure, you have Picasso, but you also have Paris in the 1920s. Sure, you have a band like the Talking Heads, but you also have 1970s New York and CBGBs and all that stuff. So the whole point about not being a genius is that, you know, actually, if you want your work to go out in the world and have an impact, you need to think about a senius, how to join a community of people out there and how to be a connector more as, you know, just being this lone genius. You know?
Well, and also the other thing, it's a few more spaces down on the list, but not to be human spam.
Right.
And describe what you mean by being human spam.
So you've met human spam. They're the people at work that, you know, they want to tell you their ideas, but they don't want to hear yours. You know, these are the people that You know, if you're a musician, they're your buddies that want you to come to their show, but they never show up to your gig. You know, these are the people that want to just kind of flood the scenius with their own junk, but they don't really give anything back in return. You know, I think there are two mythical creatures that will ruin a good community or a scenius. On one end is the human spam. On the other end is a vampire. Now, vampires, they just want to suck all the energy from the scenius. You know, they're the people that just take and take and take. And then the human spammers are the ones that just want to flood the scenius with their own junk, you know. And so you have these two, like, mythical creatures. And then the rest of us, you know, we have to find a comfortable spot in the middle. And that's what I think is a contributor. That's someone who takes a little bit from the scenius but also gives something back. You know, and there's that healthy kind of good citizen of a community, you know. And if you can think about your creativity in those terms, I think it'll just get you way further because, you know, if you want to have fans, you have to be a fan first. If you want to get noticed, you have to notice.
Why is it important to show your work? I mean, most of us are afraid of it. It's like it's young and it's delicate and it might get hurt.
Yeah. Well, you know, this was the big leap I made is that, you know, you know, we all have access to our own media now. You know, we can all have our own website. We have our own Twitter feeds, you know, our Instagram accounts, whatever. Really, the making a connection with other people, we have that ability. And so what I realized when I started writing this book is when I was thinking about self-promotion, so many of the people I look up to, they don't worry about self-promotion. They just worry about sharing. And so many of the artists and creative types, but also lawyers that I've fallen into online, my agent, for instance, they share their process. They share all the behind-the-scenes stuff. You know, if you think of it in terms of movies, you know, normally you save the blooper reel and the director's commentary and all the deleted scenes for the end, for the DVD, right? But this way of working, show your work, is like you put all that stuff out while you're making the movie, and then people get fascinated, and then they're ready to go see the movie when it comes out, you know?
Kind of knowing that little bit of interesting background.
Yeah, and it's not about oversharing, you know, because that's one of the things that I think people get confused by. It's not oversharing. It's every day looking back at your process and saying, what's some little piece that I can show people that would either be helpful to them or interesting? And if you can just look back on the day's work and say, what's helpful or interesting that I could share with other people? And you do that every day. You know, those little bits and pieces of effort over time, they turn into something big.
One of the things I was thinking of as I was reading the book is that, as you say, we all kind of take care of our own brand, as it were. You know, we have the means electronically, whether it's a website or a Facebook page or whatever it is. How do we know what to pay attention to? We're flooded by so much. You know, just everybody thinking about the interesting, fun thing that day. How do we manage to kind of sift through all of that and still have time for our own work?
I think it's all a matter of scheduling. People get so disappointed when I say this, but it's like everything's time management, you know, like because I'm supposed to be this creative guy. I go out to the woods and I get really inspired. You know, no, it's like I schedule time for everything. So I've got time to do the work, you know, to actually sit down and draw or write or whatever. And then I've got scheduled time to do the sharing or to be on Pinterest or to be on Twitter or something, you know. So make sure you have your time scheduled for the work and you get your work done first. And then schedule 30 minutes to go online and bomb your brain with inspiration and tweet things out and whatever. And then when the timer goes off, 30 minutes up, you get off and you go back to work, you know, and you just be very rigid with yourself. Because one of the things I've noticed is if you schedule time for things, then when you're in that time zone, then you can be really free.
Talk a little bit about flow and stock, because that, I think, is probably one of the key points of this book.
Yeah. So my friend Robin Sloan, he's a novelist, and Robin took this theory from economics, stock and flow. He uses it in terms of media. So what Robin says is that your flow is your day-to-day output. It's like your tweets or your blog posts or your little, you know, just your daily chattering. The stock is the stuff that lasts. It's the bigger pieces. It's like the big project that you finish for a client, or it's a book, or it's a film, or, you know, something that lasts that people will find over time. And so what Robin says is the trick is to keep your flow going while you're working on your stock. But one of the things that I kind of modified his idea, and what I do a lot in my work, is I turn my flow into stock. So what that means is so many of the chapters in my books, they start as tweets, little ideas that I tweet out there, and then people tweet back at me and give me new ideas, and I say, oh, I got to turn this into a blog post. And then I turn it into a blog post, and then people respond to that, and then pretty soon it becomes a tag on my blog, right? And then it becomes a book chapter. You know, so it's that idea of just putting these little bits and pieces out into the world, seeing how people respond to them, and then collecting them into something bigger.
What chapter?
Well, the chapter that really talks about it, share something small every day. That's this gets a little meta, but that's where that whole idea originated from. If you just do these little bits and pieces and then you collect them over time, it turns into something big.
You've got a body of work, essentially.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I think that's again, going back to that kind of marathon approach, is that, you know, to get a body of work, it's not like you have to do all this work right now. You just have to do a lot of work over time and it stacks up. You just have to give yourself a while.
Yes, we have to be patient and actually have the time, you know, or give ourselves the time to do it. And again, I go back to, you know, we're in a culture that doesn't really reward that.
Yeah.
You know, we're in this kind of instant gratification culture where we want to be famous now.
What's interesting to me is that so many of the overnight success stories, there's about 10 years of work behind it. Like Justin Bieber. Justin Bieber looks like an overnight success to everyone. But if you go on YouTube, there's pictures of him when he's like 10 years old playing a guitar. You know, like the kid's been playing music since he crawled out almost, it seems like. You know, so I think one of my missions is always to demystify creativity, to show people that behind the scenes, to say, hey, these people that you think of as these mythical creatures that have, you know, just they arrive fully formed. That's just not the case a lot of times. Sure, people are really talented, but there's a lot of work that goes into what you see.
I don't think anyone really comes fully formed.
No.
I really don't. I think that's a myth that we tell ourselves for some reason. I'm not sure why we feel a need to tell ourselves that.
I think it's marketing. You know, I think, honestly, if you're trying to sell artwork or you're trying to sell someone, a lot of times it's like, well, this is this special person. You know, this person's an alien. You'll never get anything like this. This person's special. And like, you got to go see them, you know? And it's like, I don't know what it is about mythology. People love origin stories too, you know? But that's something I try to talk about in my work too, is that the stories you tell about your work have a huge impact on how people feel about it and how people respond to it. You know, a lot of artists, they kind of cross their arms and they say, the work speaks for itself. My work speaks for itself, you know, and that's just not been my experience at all. I think that what you say about your work has a huge impact on what people think about it.
Or what you don't say, what you leave out.
Yeah. Exactly. And so, you know, what you omit can be just as, you know, important as what you tell. As any good storyteller knows.
Right. And that is another thing that you another chapter is tell good stories. Learn how to recognize them and how to tell them.
Yeah. And that's the thing. You know, I'm not a natural storyteller. My mother is. My mother's a natural storyteller. For me, it's always come a little bit harder. But one of the things I realized is that you just have to be a student before you can be a master. And if you spend a lot of time thinking about stories and what a story is, and you pay attention to stories, then you can start collecting them, and then you just start filling them in with your own stuff. And so pretty soon you can start telling your own. You know, it's just like if you learn how to draw, you copy other drawings until you have the skills, and then you can start doing your own.
It sounds like it's doing the work that matters.
Yeah. So many people, again, they focus on the inspiration. Oh, if I could just get the right idea, you know, I could write a great book, or I could make a great painting, or I could have a great business. And so many people wait until, oh, I got to know who I am before I can do my work. And so much of what I've learned is that it's really in doing the work that you find out who you are. Work has to be a verb before it's a noun. You know, so like before you have a painting, you have to paint. And so everybody wants to have the noun without the verb. And so I'm always telling people, if you can forget about the noun, forget about the job title, forget about being an artist, forget about being a writer, forget about being a plumber or whatever, you know, think about the verb. Think about what you have to do to get there. And so if that's write or paint or plumb or learn, you got to do the verb before you get the noun. And the more you can focus on the verb and doing the verb, just the better off you're going to be. Do the work.
Do the work. Show up and show the work.
Yep.
So, Austin Kleon, I am so glad that you are showing your work and that you came in to talk to us about it. It's been such a pleasure.
All the pleasure's been mine. Thank you.
Austin Kleon's newest book is called Show Your Work, 10 Ways to Share Your Creativity and Get Discovered. Kleon, who coincidentally lives in Austin, was in Milwaukee recently on a book tour, and he spoke with Bonnie North. A new book by a Milwaukee writer offers a guide to remarkable and timeless fantasy novels for children and adults. We'll hear about some of them when Lake Effect returns on WUWM.